Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City News.
It's 17:30 GMT. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. I am Umaru Sanda Amadu. And tonight I'm here with
Akosia Otre.
And coming up over the next 90 minutes.
In recent times, we've been experiencing erratic power outage. And the responsibility of the ministry is to address the challenges in this particular power sector. However,
the struggles of Ghanaian businesses continues as the doomsday intensifies with no end in sight. We'll be hearing more reactions to the persistent problem here on Eyewitness News. Also coming up, we take you to the Ashanti region where the staff of the Electricity Company of Ghana there are up in arms against the regional minister, Simon Osei-Mensah. They say they will hoist red flags in their offices nationwide from tomorrow to demand that the minister apologizes over what appeared to have happened between himself and the regional manager. And later on Eyewitness News.
After you declare the assets, everything is kept confidential between the auditor general and yourself. And therefore, it becomes very difficult for anybody to challenge the authenticity of your declaration.
Former senior minister and presidential advisor Yao Osafo-Mafo's proposal to ensure we know how much our public officials are worth before they assume office. Is that going to be popular with the politicians, though, who would be proposing these laws? Stay with 97.3 CTFM for more on this and many other stories on Eyewitness News. And in business,
financial sector stakeholders push for more enforcement of strategic measures to enhance investor confidence.
That's from the City Business Desk in 50 minutes from now. Eyewitness News is live across Ghana on a number of affiliate stations, including in the Western region on Beach 105.5 FM, Sky Power 93.5 FM, both of them based in Takoradi. In the Bono region, we are on Greener 95.9 FM in Suyani. In the Hafo region, we are on Hammers 106.5 FM in Gosu. In the Ashanti region, we are on Focus 94.3 FM in Kumasi and Orange 107.9 FM, also based in Kumasi. In the Volta region, we are on Revival 99.3 FM in Tajevu. In the Northern region, on Radio Bimbila 91.9 FM in Bimbila. In the Upper East region, we are on Tanga Radio 93.7 based in Bolga. In the Upper West region, we are on Tungsung 97.3 FM in Wa and Jirapa 96.1 FM in Jirapa. The show is also live on YouTube, live on Facebook, and we are interactive. Join us with your messages 0549-986-996. We're going to start off now with issues having to do with the power sector and the challenges that we're witnessing from CM. Akosia has a story.
Now, the executive director for the Center for Environmental Management and Renewable Energy, Benjamin Nsiah, says the continuous silence of the Minister of Energy, Matthew Opoku-Prempeh, indicates a lack of solution to the current power crisis. Ghanaians across the country are faced with erratic power supply, which is hampering businesses and affecting the day-to-day operations of many individuals. The current situation has compelled many Ghanaians to demand for a load shedding time table to plan effectively. Speaking to City News on the issue, Mr. Nsiah says calls for the minister to be sacked is justified.
In recent times, we've been experiencing erratic power outage, and the responsibility of the ministry is to address the challenges in this particular power sector. However, the ministry has remained silent, and this particular ministry is headed by the minister. And the silence of the minister indicates that the minister has no solution to our current power crisis. That is one. The second is that there has also been some infighting and hostility among power sector service providers within the power value chain. There's an infighting between GRIDCO and ECG. And that also is the responsibility of the minister to resolve this particular infighting. In recent times, we've also observed that ECD has not been compliant with most industry requirements and industry regulations, especially that of PURC. The ministry has not spoken on it and has not said anything on it. This means that maybe the challenges the power sector is facing currently has overwhelmed the minister, and for that matter, the minister doesn't have any solutions to them. So I think that it is justified for people to call for his sacking. And even if people do not, I think the minister himself, knowing well that he has not been able to manage the dire situation of the power sector, must resign on his own.
That was the Executive Director for the Center for Environmental Management and Renewable Energy, Benjamin Nsia. While still on the energy crisis, a policy think tank, Imani Africa, has urged Ghanaians who are unhappy with the recent unannounced erratic power supply to organize demonstrations to register their displeasure with the government. In response to the current power outages, often referred to as doomsday, Ghanaian actress Yvonne Nelson, who led a massive vigil against the John Mahama administration in 2015 under similar circumstances, has called on Imani to join forces and organize another protest against the NPP government. Oh, Imani played a significant role in the success of the 2015 vigil. However, responding to this new request, President of Imani Africa, Franklin Kujo, said they are making plans for a demonstration at the right time.
So, as if the issue of the intermittent power outages is not enough trouble for you, there's a communication from the Electricity Company of Ghana which is announcing more outages, except that these ones are related not to the regular problems that are causing the power outages, but rather to the rainstorm. The ECG says the Electricity Company of Ghana wishes to inform our cherished customers in the Greater Accra region that they have the heavy rainstorm experienced today, Tuesday, 23rd April 2024, has caused outages within the distribution network. Customers should please note that our engineers are working assiduously to restore power supply to affected customers. Customers experiencing outages within their areas should kindly contact our call center or report to the nearest ECG office or reach us on our social media handles. The inconvenience caused due to this natural occurrence is very much regretted. Very interesting choice of words there. Natural occurrence, as the ECG would want you to know the reason for maybe today's doomsday at least. Kofi Kapito speaks for Ghanaian consumers. He is CEO of the Consumer Protection Agency. He's joining me on the line. Mr. Kapito, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Good evening to you. Good evening to your listeners.
The power outages, I don't know, do you also face same? Perhaps you live in an area where you are not affected, but the generality of people who have spoken to us have said they are experiencing power outages which have not been explained or they have not been forewarned, and this is becoming a problem. From the consumer point of view, what do you have to say about what's happening?
You know, it is a very sad day for a consumer whose need is for the electricity to stay on, whether for personal use or for commercial purpose. Look, as the last thing that you read from the ECG, I agree with them. It was a special rainstorm, so if power outages happen, it can be repaired within the shortest time possible. It's not unique to Ghana. It happens in even the advanced countries whereby a storm can knock a lot of powers down, power lines down. But the pertinent thing is whether definite or indefinite situation that a consumer faces. Look, I will wish that ECG can come up with a timetable. But if you look at it, as we all know, that it is not like before that maybe we had to build some transformers that we knew it would take us a couple of months or a year to do that, that you can proper plan and bring a timetable. Unfortunately, this time, because it's financial, it is difficult for ECG to say that, I will bring a timetable, simply because if they bring the timetable today, and let's say tomorrow or the day after, money becomes available that they are able to either pay the IPPs or the IPPs have money to buy the necessary fuel to power their plants. Then what happens to the plant tape? That, I think, is the challenge that ECG is facing. Because, yes, ECG is in the business. Let me repeat. ECG is in the business to sell you electricity. When ECG gets the electricity, ECG has no need apart from selling it to you, the consumer, or to anybody that needs it. So when people sometimes behave as if ECG has the power and they are doing something purposely of not distributing it, I find it a little bit difficult. Let me tell you the chain of, as most people know, the IPPs, Greco, who is in the middle, and ECG is the last end to sell you electricity. If the IPPs are unable to generate and Greco is not able to transmit, how do you expect the ECG to get it to distribute it to your house? So it is a problem that the minister, what the last person was saying, I think it is in the bosom of the minister, for the minister to make sure that whatever situation that we are in, fortunately, this is not like before that we needed months to build plants or to bring plants in. This is something that is financial and we need to find money to fix this problem.
So you are essentially saying that we should cut ECG some slack?
We should cut them some slack for the simple reason, like I said, they are in the business to sell you electricity. If they don't get electricity, how do you expect ECG to sell it to you and I? Because somebody should generate. Somebody should be able to transport or transmit. And then he needs to retail. It's just like a distribution chain. The manufacturer, the wholesaler, and the retailer. If the manufacturer doesn't manufacture and the wholesaler doesn't get a goods, how do you expect the retailer to be able to sell you the goods?
But the retailer has been collecting money from you that he will supply you the goods. He owes you owes you that information, at least, that he can't bring you the goods.
As for that one, I agree with you. They need to tell us why they are unable to get us the power. I agree with you 100%. You cannot take my money and not tell me why you cannot sell me the goods that I need. That one, I agree with you. But all I'm saying is somebody, like people are talking about institutions, right? It's the Ministry of Energy that all these things fall under. And the Ministry of Finance. Look, we need money. It's as simple as that. It's not like before. And it's all because, as usual, politics in Ghana. Somebody is able to be bold and tell Ghanaians that, listen, this is the situation. We apologize. We are sorry. We will fix it. Give us some time. Because they are afraid that some time ago, they used it against another political party that now, instead of doing so, is called what? Doom CAC. It doesn't make any sense to the administration. All the guys, let there be light. Even God was so much afraid of darkness. When he created the world, he didn't say, let there be water. He said, let there be light.
Now that there are calls for demonstrations against the government, is that something you would be interested in leading?
You know, if some body can put it together, I will join them, because ideally, it is funny how the Ghanaian consumer, sometimes, even if you call them to come and demonstrate, sometimes will disappoint you because there's too much on the plate of the Ghanaian. Or that maybe this time, a lot of Ghanaians and across board, this should not be something against a particular party. It's about the government in power, which the government in power somehow has failed to do what they promised when they were in opposition. You remember when they told us that Dumsa would be a thing of the past? And after 7 years, why are we going through it again? So it is in the right direction if anybody calls for demonstration.
But you will not initiate it because you are not sure people come.
Because you know what? You and I, let's start today. Okay, let's encourage Ghanaians that, yes, we are going to do a demonstration. But you have to understand, doing a protest or a demonstration, there's rules and regulations. First, I need to write to the police people to tell them that maybe I expect 100, 1,000 people, that they will also tell us that, oh, maybe we can accommodate you. Yeah, sometimes you write to them and they tell you that they cannot do it. But I hope that this time Even I'm sure the police are not even happy about the situation that is going on. So maybe I'll take your advice. We would I'll engage City FM. Let us use your platform. Let us engage Ghanaians that maybe when me and City FM comes to an agreement, we could say maybe we can start a process. And then, look, let Yvonne Nelson, let Imani, let all interested people come together. Then it will be a Ghanaian representation, not something against a particular party.
Thank you so much for speaking to us, sir.
Thank you.
That's Kofi Kapito. He's CEO of the Consumer Protection Agency. Let's go to Dr. Joseph Obin. He's president of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA. Doc, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, sir.
How is DUMSO affecting Ghanaian traders?
Yeah, you know, the business that we do is so varying. Depends on what particular trader is doing. If you talk about things that are perishable, then of course you know that we have to keep them under cold areas. And then also, those people who deal in other cool stores and other things. Then obviously it is important that we have consistent power or a managed power that we do the timings and all that. And so we are also talking about the... Hello?
I'm listening to you, Doc.
Yeah, so I've said that the business that we do is so varying, and then it depends on what a person is trading in. And aside that, generally, we need a very good ambience to do this trading. We need a comfortable place to do business. That's where our customers also meet us. So you have to get a comfortable place where there's no heat and all that. We need the air conditioning, you need the air the ceiling fans and all that, means that you have to incur a lot more cost to provide the generators if even you can afford. If you cannot, then of course it will not provide the correct environment, conducive environment for the trading. So for these reasons, I think we have to fast track on whatever thing that we are doing to make sure that we solve this problem.
What are your people at the ports who deal with the cold stores, or even generally in our markets who deal with the cold store business, what are they saying to you?
Yeah, it's a normal complaint that you've been hearing, and that you know this is not a comfortable situation for anybody. Even if you are not working and you are staying in the house, sleeping in the heat and all that is not comfortable. And so, and the one thing that is even worrying is that, you know, sometimes you have arranged to do a specific business. You have paid for a casual laborer to come and do a specific job that will require electricity. When they come and they're light off, they will just take their money and go. And so that's why people want some information. If this thing is going to persist, then, of course, the onus lies on the managers of the electricity to find a way to communicate with us so that we can also know how to plan our business. The business is all about planning, and we believe that they have to do that. So unless they have other information that we do not have, they should also let us know why probably they don't want to provide a timing for us, so that we'll be able to plan.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you so much, also.
That is Dr. Joseph Obin. He's president of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, GUTA. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTF. And we have more when we come back. Please stay.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
The call generally is to Minister of Energy to publish the rationalization of the power. Nobody can do it except the Minister of Energy. You get my point, because they are seeing the generation and they are looking at the utilization. So they can have one and say that in this particular area, this is how it should be. In that particular area, that is how it should be. But it's something which can be done. Because you are what you have and what you have to use, and then the spread. But the power has been generated at certain quarters. It has to be distributed throughout the whole country.
That's former finance minister, former sports minister, former senior minister, former MP, and now presidential advisor Yao Osafomafo speaking on the Dumso timetable. He was speaking at an event, right? And he touched on other issues. This is just one of many things he talked about today. Akosua has the other angles to the story.
Well, he has been making a strong case for the publication of declared assets of public officials. Or he observed that cultural practice of inheritance had made all, including public officials, fear the public disclosure of their assets. He was speaking at the Open Government Partnership and Construction Sector Transparency Initiative stakeholder engagement.
In Ghana, when you become a minister of state at all levels, public sector at certain levels, the first thing you do is to declare your assets and file same with the Auditor General. What I personally don't like about this law is that after you've declared the assets, everything is kept confidential between the Auditor General and yourself. And therefore, it becomes very difficult for anybody to challenge the authenticity of your declaration. I think that, yes, let's declare the assets, but there should be a certain level of transparency in the declaration of the assets that people can assess what you declared, also by certain procedures. It happens to be in the Consultative Assembly when we're drawing up the Constitution of the Republic, when we put in this phrase. And I was championing the publication of the assets. And of course, the chiefs were there in their right numbers. The chiefs were so furious with me because they said, look, do you want people to kill us when they know what we have? So people, because of our traditional system of inheritance, where in the Akan world is maternal inheritance, so that when I am dead, it's my sister's, it's my brother first, after my brother, my sister's children. It's matrilineal. So if people know that you have a lot of things, they may kill you in advance. So people are scared to openly let people know what they have publicly. And people advance a lot of argument to prevent this open declaration of assets, which are made accessible to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. It's because of our culture. But still, we should find a way of making the asset declaration accessible, in my view.
That was Senior Presidential Advisor Yao Osafomafo.
Professor Bafo Ajimandia is a governance analyst. He's joining us on the line for more discussions on this particular subject. Prof, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you for having me.
Initial comments or reactions to this proposal by the former senior minister?
Frankly, I find it very heartening to know that Mr. Osafomafo has his views on the asset declaration. And it's a pleasure, at least for me, to know that during the formulation or the writing of the Constitution, on this very aspect that requires the assets to be declared, he stood tall trying to convince others to agree that this section should be properly drafted to allow transparency in the declaration of assets. So my initial comment is, wow, I never knew that he has these views. He's been in government for many years, as you know. So I've never heard him talk publicly about these matters. So I find it very, very exciting that for the first time, we are getting insight to this particular section of the Constitution, the so-called cultural constraints that make people decide not to be open about their assets. But I should say that does not really surprise me. But the fact is, if anybody wants to be in public office, this cultural constraint cannot be respected. If you are going to serve the public, you must be prepared to open up, because this is a major source of corruption. And because it's not open, it's always in the drawer. We are unable to monitor public officials who just get into public service to amass wealth. So this is a very interesting debate that he has started.
Now, the culture challenges that this particular clause faced 30 years ago are still here, which means that this proposal, if it does come up, is going to face the same opposition that the chiefs at the Constituent Assembly raised, don't you think? Which means it's going to be really a Herculean task to see this go through.
But don't you find it interesting, Umaru, that it, in fact, is the chiefs who blocked it? The chiefs are not even allowed to be in public office. So how could a group of people who have been banned from directly participating in public office be the stumbling block for opening up this particular issue?
Mind you, at the time, the constitution was not in force. It is this constitution that barred them. Perhaps at the time, again, it was a law that was being formulated, so their views were accepted. Even though the law anticipated that they would not take part, they possibly thought they would be affected, or maybe they didn't even know they would not be affected, and could be the reason. I don't know. This is just speculation because we're not there.
You're right. I was not there either. But following the logic of this, Umaru, I think it gives us a new opportunity to really begin to debate this and open that section for scrutiny. Because if those who were afraid of this particular clause are banned from participating, then I think gives us a golden opportunity to revisit this case and to revise this section, so that we can truly bring some transparency in the acquisition of assets by public officials. There's so much corruption, as we all know, and corruption basically, I know it's widespread, but it is essentially carried on by people in public office for all kinds of reasons. So for me, this culture has been proposed by, or you know, narrated by the chief, no longer I don't find it tenable anymore. I don't.
The counter argument for those who do not think that this should be declared, aside what the Honorable Osafo Mafo raises, is the other issue about people who are already established in society, very rich people, who simply want to come into politics to serve and not to steal. These people do not want their assets known, and for that matter, they would rather shun away from coming to serve in public office if that would be the precondition for serving. How do you deal with that particular challenge too?
It could be a challenge for those who think that they've acquired assets maybe illegitimately, because if the society knows your hard work, your sincerity, your integrity, and you own 10 houses, I don't think anybody's going to quarrel with that. I think generally it will be those who may be afraid of how they acquire the assets that wouldn't want the public to know. Even though I do respect the fact that culturally certain individuals or certain groups do not want to be known to be rich. And I don't know whether this came more so as a result of the so-called revolution of the 1970s, when rich people were hunted, you see. So it's a mix of things. But I think that if you want to go into public service and you are clear and the public knows of your integrity, I don't see why you should be afraid that you have 10 or 2 or how many houses, you have 3 cars, you have whatever, and going to serve your country, you think that is a problem. I it's hard for me to understand that. So I think it all boils down to integrity of individuals who want to serve the public. you know, in the United States and other places. And I think to some extent, Dr. Parker syndrome exemplified that when he decided to enter active politics. We have something we call putting your assets in a blind trust. Nobody has to know it. You put in the blind trust, you distance yourself, especially if you are running business. You distance yourself from that so that there will be no conflict of interest when you are in public office. So there are mechanisms that society, we can create to protect those, in that kind of situation. But to give a blind statement that because I have wealth and therefore I cannot serve my country, I find it a bit ridiculous. I can't understand that. So my point is this. If you have earned your assets legitimately, there is a system to protect you if you get into public office. The whole idea is to focus on what else you acquire whilst you are in office. The asset declaration, for that matter, checking corruption, is not looking at what you had before you got into public office. There are two distinct things. So still, it's hard for me to hear this kind of argument that I have wealth and therefore if I go into public office, I'll be known to be wealthy. I don't know. Unless, of course, there may be some cultures where perhaps if you are known to be wealthy, you think you'll be killed by your own people or the witches will come after you. If those cultural beliefs are there, then I can understand that. You know, other than that, I don't see what is wrong with the public knowing. But again, as I've said, there is a mechanism to protect you, to protect the assets that you have earned legitimately before you enter public service.
But Prof, typically in our communities and even in our private lives, people do not know what we have. And people may, you know, there are people who even think that by people knowing that you own this and you've mentioned witchcraft and all of that, there are several reasons why people don't want their private stuff in the public domain. Why should we publicize someone's assets because they are going to serve in public office? Is that not a breach of their privacy?
Oh, my Ralph already said that there's a mechanism to protect you.
Yeah, so Osafu Mafo's proposal is it should be out there in the public for everybody to see. And I'm saying that currently, as private individuals, our properties are not out there in the public.
Correct.
So why should this guy... Why should this guy's privacy be breached when we all respect each other's privacy and we want to protect same?
Yes. Actually, if that's what Mr. Osafu Mafo is proposing, I would disagree with him. That if you're entering public office, your assets should be publicized. No.
I think for purpose of a better understanding and also to appreciate the matters, I want to play what he said again. So we are certain as to whether he wants it to publicize or want it publicized but controlled. Because currently, you declare the assets, but it is not known to the public, only to an officer of the law, as so mandated, I believe. I think the Attorney General. I think he's proposing a departure from that. Let's listen to him.
Okay.
The court generally is to Minister of Energy to publish the rationalization of the power.
Apologies.
Nobody can do it.
Okay, apologies. Not this particular. This is him talking about Dumso. Let me take you back to the main voice that I want us to listen to. Apologies for that. Let's listen again.
In Ghana, when you become a minister of state, all levels, public sector at certain levels, the first thing you do is to declare your assets. File same with the auditor general. What I personally don't like about this law is that after you declare the assets, everything is kept confidential between the auditor general and yourself. And therefore, it becomes very difficult for anybody to challenge the authenticity of your declaration. I think that, yes, let's declare the assets, but there should be a certain level of transparency in the declaration of the assets that people can assess what you declared.
So there you have it. There should be a means of getting the information by certain procedures. I don't know. I wish he had elaborated. Perhaps he's talking about maybe you could go under the right to information law. I don't know if that's what he means, but he's simply saying that the fact that you lodged the assets declaration with the auditor, not auditor general. I think it's auditor general he mentioned.
It's auditor general.
There's no way I would get to know.
Oh, Minister of Justice. We don't even know exactly who is supposed to keep this.
So he's saying that if you want to challenge anything, you can't really, because you don't even know what the guy has declared.
You see, again, there's a way to cure that. I was in Liberia as a UN governance advisor, and the Liberian Anti-Corruption Commission, they had a style. When you enter public office, they look at your assets, they take pictures and create a file for you. It's not publicized, but they take pictures and keep on your file. And when you are leaving office, they have evidence of what you had prior to you are taking the office. And then they'll go again to find out if any additional assets have been acquired. So in the same way, we can have a mechanism that you declare, then it can be verified by a special group of people constituted, I don't know whether you call it commission, committee, or whatever, but through the Attorney General's Office or Minister of Justice Office or whichever agency we designate. They can go and verify everything you have in that kind of manner without publicizing it, you see, so that there is witness to what you had. And as he proposed, if there's a serious case requiring access to that information, then through what we have today as the Freedom of Information Act, you can have access, examine it, and just take your notes and make whatever point you want to make. So again, I'm saying that there's always a way to provide mechanisms to safeguard the private interests of individuals, all right? But again, don't forget that we are in a different age than we were 30 years ago when the Constitution was written. 30 years ago, there was nothing like iPhone Pro 14 or whatever. There was nothing like social media. There was nothing like, information floating freely everywhere. So if I go and declare 10 houses, you may not know who has already recorded my assets. And that's what is really checking governance these days, that if you want to rule a country and you make all kinds of promises, sooner or later, people are going to play back their own statements to haunt you. So I think we are in a different era. But at the same time, we can have answers for questions that arise from the difference that we have in terms of how we live our lives and all. So in simple terms, if we are serious about getting transparency in the acquisition of assets as a way of checking corruption in our country, certainly we can put brains together to devise a system that will seek to protect the private interests of potential public officials, while at the same time checking whether people are amassing wealth fraudulently.
Finally, is there a possibility perhaps that, you know, this whole issue of asset declaration, it is easier said than done. Osafomafo has been minister since the Kufuor days. Yeah. He just recently ceased to be a minister.
Right.
If he really believed in this and thought it should happen, he should have led by example, because nothing would have stopped him from publicizing his assets if he wanted to. Don't you think maybe he should have started, you know, becoming a leader with an example so that others would follow?
Oh, Maru, you are asking me to say things that I cannot say because I don't know his mind. I don't know why he's now coming out with this idea. But generally, let's put it this way. It's like our government system here. When a party is in opposition, they see all evil in the party in power. Nothing good. And when the tables turn, become the same way. So in other words, our politicians seem to see better when they are no longer playing active politics, which is a tragic thing for him, you know. So you're right. I mean, maybe at that time he hadn't developed this kind of idea, perhaps this idea came to him forcefully once he left office, and he's beginning to realize how politicians like him have been cheating the people by stealing things and corrupting things. So maybe he's a born-again politician, as we say. That's possible. That's possible.
Very possible. Very possible. But thank you so much for speaking to us, Prof.
It's my pleasure.
That's Professor Bafua Jimandia. He is a governance analyst. Messages coming through on this subject. Prince Bansa sends me a message from the UK and he says, Yao Safumafo's proposal won't work. Why? Firstly, you cannot address corruption in public office without dealing with political party campaign financing. Also, for politicians to move this idea only after they no longer serve in an active political capacity is likely to receive any serious attention. Again, politicians don't only launder money, they also do launder projects. In that regard, they can simply own unexplained wealth and properties using non-politically exposed as proxies. In any case, the solutions are all tied to campaign financing and the unrealistic promises politicians make when seeking office. So that is a message from Prince Bansa. Another prince, this one is called Henry from Kofredua. He says, Mr. Osafumafo should practice equity by asking his son, who has been appointed as the new director general of the SNIT, to declare his assets. Then we can hold him seriously with his statement. Simple. He who comes to equity must do so with clean hands. That's what he says. And many more messages are coming through. Let me look at this particular one. Someone drawing my attention to an article by the Fourth Estate on anti-corruption. It says, asset declaration, Baumia, Ofuriata, Osafumafo, Chemensa, Bonso, and 89 others did not fully comply. This is actually a story that was published on June 2nd, 2022 by Seth Bokwe. And it says, such an interesting intervention from Seth there. It says that when President Akufo-Addo was sworn into office in January 2017, one of the first constitutional obligations he embarked on was the declaration of his assets. The Fourth Estate source in government says the chief of staff sent reminders to ministers and other top appointees to declare their assets. In July 2017, the president said, quote, I declared my assets within 2 weeks of my inauguration, and so has the vice president. The ministers have declared their assets, and I'm insisting that all those required to do so under the law should comply. In March 2022, the Fourth Estate wrote to the audit service using the right to information law to request information on public office holders who had declared their assets from January 2013 up to date. The audit service responded with the data in May 2022 with two booklets of information of almost 350 pages. The booklets contain the names of all public office holders who have declared their assets and the days of declarations in all the regions of Ghana from 2013 to May 2022. That information revealed that 28 ministers and deputy ministers of state who served or are still serving in the Akufo-Addo administration did not declare their assets at all. The information also revealed that the president and 19 of his ministers have fully complied with the asset declaration law. The president and his ministers on that list who have served since 2017 have declared their assets at least 3 times. Now let's look at the part where they say there was no declaration. He said, however, the vice president and more than 90 ministers and deputy ministers who have served in the Akufo-Addo administration have not fully complied with the law. Some ministers who spoke to the Fourth Estate in the course of this series have argued that declaring one's assets at the beginning of the first term and at the beginning of the second term cover for the end of the first term. To them, not declaring at the end of the first term doesn't amount to a breach because the end of the first term and the beginning of the second term are almost within the same period. So that is the Fourth Estate publication I'm looking for, where they have the list of people who have not declared. But I see that the headline says, Baumia, Ofuriata, Osafumafo, Chemensa Bonso, and 89 others did not fully comply. So that is just an intervention that Seth Bokwe of the Fourth Estate is sharing with me about a publication that they did some years back. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka in Accra. We are also live around the globe on citynewsroom.com. We'll be back with more after this break. Please stay.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
You're welcome back. Let's do some more stories. The staff of the Ashanti Regional Branch of the Electricity Company of Ghana, ECG, says they will hoist red flags in their offices nationwide from tomorrow if the regional minister, Simon Osei-Mensah, does not apologize to their manager. Or the regional minister is accused of causing the arrest of their general manager, Engineer Makuriafe Asumeni, following a power cut at the Kumasi Technical University. Or Mr. Asumeni was later released on self-recognizance bill. When Anita Rose, City News, a spokesperson for the staff of the ECG in the Ashanti region, Bismarck Adoma, says the minister has close of date today to render the apology.
We've not heard anything from him, so we'll go ahead. Even now, the whole country, they have also, in solidarity with what has happened to our general manager, they are all going to host red flag tomorrow and put on the red dress tomorrow. The whole Ghana, you see, they are going to wear red, host red flags in all our offices. And we have four general managers in Ashanti region. We have also instructed them that until the apologies come, they will not attend any meeting called by the Ashanti regional minister.
That was Bismarck Adoma, his spokesperson for staff of the Ashanti regional branch of the electricity of Ghana, Electricity Company of Ghana, forgive me. Now let's move away from that, because four persons have been remanded into police custody for the alleged involvement in the train accident at Abotia. All the four persons are alleged to have been in the vehicle with the driver, who has so far been sentenced to 6 months in prison with hard labor. Well, according to the facts of the case, the first accused person contracted the convicted driver to deliver some blocks from Juapong to Abotia. All the other three accused persons, who are laborers, were said to be in the car with the first accused and the driver before abandoning it on the rail tracks. Well, according to police investigations, all the blocks were brought from Juapong to Abotia through an underpass at the railway, but upon their return, they decided not to use the underpass but rather cross the rail line. Well, this resulted in the vehicle being stuck, which was later abandoned, causing the accident of the new train. While the High Court in Accra is yet to take the pleas of the four accused persons, but the case has been adjourned to May 8, 2024. Away to education, the sector minister, Dr. Yao Seyidichum, is commending the inclusive nature of the free senior high school policy, which ensures education access for all students. Or during an event themed the Free Senior High School Story, he highlighted the initiative's provision of educational interventions to support students and learning activities. Well, Dr. Edichum emphasized that the policy promotes equity, ensuring that no child is excluded, and has over the years led to high student enrollment.
The advent of Free Senior High School. Very simple. Rather than the cut-off opportunity to a cut-off 200,000 students who go through the Free Senior High School. Place of education to all and for all, and ensure that everyone has an opportunity. That was the choice of Madam Dabwebe Fuad, that every student will be an opportunity. And when they get to the senior high school, there should be an intervention for them. Schools should provide intervention for those who come there with higher academics, and ensure that they do a proper degree health outside the flexibility to create intervention classes. Those are no high school level courses that they can offer to bring the students up. There are some who did not get a very good primary school mathematics teacher, so that means they are not smart. If you give them the opportunity, they will prove to you that they are smart and they can do something else.
That was Minister of Education Dr. Yao Seyidichum. Still in education, the Commission for Technical and Vocational Education and Training, CTVET, has called for sustained investment in technical and vocational education and training, TVET, in Ghana, emphasizing the critical importance of continuous investment in TVET to bolster the economy with sustainable employment opportunities. speaking at a TVET symposium held on the theme Advancing TVET and Skills Development Towards Sustainable and Decent Job Creation, the Director General of the Commission for Technical and Vocational Training, Dr. Fred Che Asamoah, underscored the Commission's role in advocating and implementing initiatives to fortify the sector.
Throughout the symposium, insightful discussions, innovative ideas, and best practices will be shared, laying the groundwork for transformative action. The government of Ghana, we know, have been investing in TVET and continue to invest in TVET, and we are expecting there will be a continuous and increased investment in TVET. It is imperative to recognize that the journey towards advancing TVET does not end here. Rather, it will mark the beginning of a concerted effort to implement recommendations and insights garnered during the deliberations. It is our desire that harnessing the potential of TVET will empower individuals with the skills and opportunities needed to thrive in the ever-evolving workforce landscape.
Dr. Fred Che Mensah is the Director General of the Commission for Technical and Vocational Training. Now, the National President of the Graduate Students Association of Ghana, GRASAG, Emmanuel Opong, or Owusu rather, has expressed confidence in the proposed 24-hour economy by former President John Dramani Mahama. Well, he believes that this policy has the potential to significantly transform the Ghanaian market. Well, Emmanuel Owusu shared these sentiments during the unveiling of the GRASAG research report on the 24-hour economy, which seeks to analyze and provide recommendations to shape the implementation of the proposed policy.
Implementing a 24-hour economy would increase productivity, create jobs, enhance service delivery, and help align Ghana's socio-economic objectives. It will stimulate innovation, attract foreign direct investment, foster sustainable growth, and position Ghana as a global economic competitor. And so these are some of the views that our colleagues across the country have shared with us. We believe that the 24-hour economy is something that will transform the republic. And so we know the former president had hinted. For us as GRASAG, it's our hope that when he gets the nod to become president, he considers some of these recommendations, and so that eventually we can have a smooth 24-hour economy as we consider it.
That was National President of the Graduate Students Association of Ghana, GRASAG, Emmanuel Owusu. Meanwhile, economist Professor Lord Mensah asserts that while the policy is feasible, the government must strategically position itself and capitalize on existing infrastructure to ensure the successful realization of the 24-hour economy.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Get the details. Every significant financial transaction, every market movement, and all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
Time now for City Business News and Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. I am Akosia Ochuletseto for the details. Well, stakeholders within the financial industry are rallying behind calls for stricter regulatory oversight, urging relevant agencies to enforce policies that instill confidence in the investment landscape. Well, this push comes in the wake of recent challenges, notably the turbulence witnessed during the domestic debt exchange program and the financial sector cleanup exercise. Addressing participants at the 2024 Money Summit organized by the BNFT in Accra, Atayebu Ajan, as the Deputy Managing Director of Fidelity Bank Ghana, emphasized the need for a renewed ethos in the financial landscape.
Our appeal to regulators and policymakers is we must enforce regulation that promote transparency, fairness, accountability in the financial markets. We must implement policies that promote market stability, mitigate systemic risks, and prevent excessive speculation or market manipulation that could harm investors and undermined confidence in the financial system. The recent DDEP demonstrates that more needs to be done in this area. Obviously, there were systemic risks that could have been addressed earlier and could have been avoided. And that's what makes this point very important. Regulators should adopt a proactive approach to fintech regulation, foster innovation, and ensure that new technologies do not compromise the safety and integrity of the financial system. We must consider more tax incentives. If as a nation we want to promote a culture of savings, we must induce that through tax incentives. We must prescribe which long-term investments will qualify for tax incentives and pursue them.
Well, the Deputy Managing Director of Fidelity Bank further underscored the importance of adapting investment strategies to meet the evolving needs of a growing demographic to ensure sustainable economic growth and prosperity for all.
Savings and investments play a pivotal role in driving economic growth, fostering entrepreneurship, and building resilience against financial shocks. In today's ever-changing economic landscape, the traditional approach to investment and savings may no longer suffice to secure a stable financial future. The path to sustainable growth and prosperity requires us to rethink our approach to investments and savings. In recent years, Ghana has made significant strides in economic development and financial inclusion. However, as the country's population continues to grow, so does the demand for more resources and the need for sustainable economic growth and development.
That was the Deputy Managing Director of Fidelity Bank Ghana, Atta Yebuajan. Now, away from that, as concerns about Ghana's cocoa sector continue to rise due to its seemingly diminishing yields, the citrus and juice industry appears poised to be the next game changer for the country. Well, according to experts from the industry, this could be the drive for economic transformation for the country if the numerous opportunities within that sector are given the needed credit support. In an interview with City Business News, industrial expert lawyer Kobina Akwa says if Ghana could grow this industry, these earnings could improve on the country's balance of payment, strengthen its reserves, as well as stabilize the currency.
If I talk of golden opportunity, I'm talking about what we consume. Unfortunately, Ghana as a country imports around in the region of $250 million worth of fruit juice. Meanwhile, what do we have? We have all the fruits, all the tropical fruits to run into juices. We have land. To tell you the truth, we've lost about 570,000 hectares of our land to galamsey and to plant diseases. If we are to reclaim this and redirect our efforts, for example, towards even coconut alone, which does about 18,000 Ghana cedis per acre. We're talking of the country itself making around 25 billion Ghana cedis per year. Meanwhile, we have all these unique exotic tropical fruits to give to the world. And that is what Ekumfi Fruits and Juices Limited is leading the charge. So we're talking about citrus. Citrus alone in Ghana. Throughout the world, Ghana's citrus is second only to that of South Africa. And by citrus, I'm talking about all the orange, lime, tangerine, lemon, and all of that. And we have two seasons. So this presents a very golden opportunity for us to jump onto the next level.
That was lawyer Kwebna Akwa, an industrial expert speaking to City Business News. Finally, international exhibition company Afriset Montgomery is hosting over 2,500 packaging, processing, plastics and printing exhibitors and industry players at its three-day exhibition and conference to provide insights and knowledge. Or the Propak Ghana exhibition being held in Accra is set to provide a platform for suppliers and also service providers to display cutting-edge products and services being offered. While speaking at the opening ceremony of the exhibition, Managing Director of Montgomery Africa, Alexander Angu, expressed Propak Ghana's dedication to bolstering Ghana's efforts to boost exports of locally made products.
Ropak Ghana is the only dedicated international event serving the manufacturing industries in this country. It provides a platform for suppliers and service providers to display their cutting-edge technologies and service offerings. It will showcase the latest technologies bringing new companies to Ghana for the first time. Ropak Ghana will help drive this integral industry further forwards. Visitors to the event will be able to explore the latest innovations in products from leading suppliers in the region. In addition, they will see international companies from all over the corner, from every corner of the globe, who will be showcasing the newest advances in industry innovation that can support the local manufacturing industry. Visitors will benefit from seeing live demonstrations of machinery and solutions in action, something that no other platform can offer in Ghana. Our objective here is clear, and that is to establish Propak as the key platform supporting Ghana's aspirations to increase the output of their Made in Ghana brand and boost its exports.
Voice of Alexander Angu, he's Managing Director of Montgomery Africa, or Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Export Promotion Authority, GEPA, Dr. Ifua Asabi-Asare, highlighted proper Ghana's efforts in advancing Ghana's export endeavors.
Let us embrace a spirit of collaboration and synergy, pooling our collective expertise and experiences and resources for the greater good. I am confident that through our cooperative escort, we can unlock new opportunities, conquer new markets, and realize our full potential on the world stage. Ghana Export Promotion Authority stands ready to support you every step of the way, offering a myriad of services tailored to meet your unique needs. Finally, allow me to underscore the significance of Propak Ghana for our exporter community. As part of GEPA's export readiness checks, we scrutinize the competitive advantage of our exporters and assess their readiness to penetrate international markets. Today, as we gather amidst the back of innovation and creativity, let us reflect on these critical questions from Ghana Export Promotion Authority's readiness checks.
Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Export Promotion Authority, GEPA, Dr. Ifua Asabi-Asare, closing the curtains on City Business News and Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Akosia Ochido. Stay with us. Up next is Point Blank.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
This is Prime Blanc on Eyewitness News. My name is Umaru Sanda. But tonight we are going back to hear more from Yao Osafo-Mafo. He served in various portfolios in the Akufo-Addo administration before becoming senior minister in the Akufo-Addo government. Now he's senior presidential advisor. He spoke at a program known as the Open Government Partnership, Construction Sector Transparency Initiative Stakeholder Engagement. It happened in Accra. He spoke on a number of issues, including Dumso and the asset declaration. Let's listen to him.
When you look at the world, we talk about developed world and developing world. What really divides the two is the level of infrastructure development. Those we describe as developed world are those who have their infrastructure development at a very high level. And those you call developing, like Ghana, are those of us who are now working hard to put our infrastructure development in order. For any nation to develop, your infrastructure must be there. As the chairman of Ghana's National Open Government Partnership Steering Committee, I am particularly delighted that Ghana, a nation committed to transparency, accountability, and open government, is hosting the 51st COST International Board meeting. I believe that at the end of this 51st national meeting, Ghana will pick a lot of things from us, all of you here with your experience, to make sure that we benefit from your exposure and experience. If you take the budget of any country, and for that matter, that of our country, Ghana, the main cost of government is the financing of infrastructure. And the main source of worry to government is also corruption in the financing of infrastructure. Because at the end of the day, if you can really put the financing of your infrastructure right, to be cost effective, to be efficient, to be modernized, 80% of your problem is resolved. Because you're talking about your road network, you are talking about your education, you are talking about your power construction, you are talking about your water works, you are talking about anything that makes you a developed nation or a developing nation. So I am particularly happy that we're having the chance to do this course here in Ghana now. Ghana's journey towards fostering open government principle is underscored by our unwavering commitment to transparency, accountability of public office holders, participation in governance, and use of modern technology to enhance good governance. One thing which is also very clear is that technology as a tool to fight corruption is very effective. Because if you can get to a level where you remove the human touch, human contact, and technology, people are filling forms on the internet, we are filling forms on the net, they are filling forms on this, and you are able to get your results electronically, you are minimizing corruption. So it is important that we bring to the fore technology to play its rightful role in our effort to reduce corruption. Achievements under the OGP include reforms to Ghana's oil and gas licensing regime, under which open contracting has been made the preferred mode of license allocation by law, not by procedure, by law. Establishment of a beneficial ownership disclosure regime, but by law. The Companies Code Act 2019, Act 992, which is helping to combat illicit financial flows through tax avoidance and transfer pricing manipulations, and other reforms which we have taken from the legal angle, include the following: the passage of the Right to Information Act 2019, Act 989, to remove restrictions in accessing public information critical in fighting corruption and crimes against the state, Ghana. So it is the right of every Ghanaian to accept certain information, and is backed by law. When he demands information from any ministry within certain stipulated time, he must have the answer to the request. The establishment of the State Interest and Governance Authority, what we call SIGA, to improve governance of state-owned enterprises and to ensure their viability. The state has a lot of interest in various things. We group all of them together and giving them a governing board to ensure transparency. The passage of the Fiscal Responsibility Act 2018 Act 982 to curb arbitrary extra-budgetary expenditure and uncontrolled spending by the executive, especially in election year, leading to steep growth in public debt. We have noticed through historical data that in almost all elections here, except one, but I wouldn't tell you which one, except one, we've had over expenditure by government. And this, of course, creates big problem after the elections. And you begin to get your inflation going up to the roof, everything. So that a lot of good work done in 3 years by government get completely undermined by what I call election year expenditure. And this distorts the economy. And to correct errors in the economy is amounting to normally sacrifices. It's the poor who suffers. McNamara, the president of the World Bank, once said, inflation is the enemy of the poor. Inflation is the enemy of the poor. When inflation really goes up, the rich can always top up. They can retain their level of standard of living without much trouble. But the poor gets its level of living going down, down, down. So inflation is the enemy of the poor. The passage of the Witness Protection Act, 2018 Act 975, to provide safeguards and personal security for persons whose witness help in the prosecution of public officers and private individuals. So we have a law that protects the witnesses who come forward to help prosecute corruption in the public sector. And we have promotion of transparency in the extractive industry, especially in the areas of revenue management and commodity trading. As much as possible, we've put certain laws in place to make it easy for transparency to prevail, to make it easy for accountability to prevail. And these are all important because it makes the management of the whole system easy. Distinguished invited guests, in accordance, consolidating our gain, Ghana co-created 4-year 5 OGP action plan to encapsulate a vision where government is transparent, responsive, and accountable to citizens. Under accountability, one, asset declaration and witness protection, anti-money laundering and combating terrorism financing, health service delivery, and strengthening the effectiveness of anti-corruption institutions, like Shraj is emphasized. In Ghana, when you become a minister of state at all levels, public sector at certain levels, the first thing you do is to declare your assets and file same with the Auditor General. What I personally don't like about this law is that after you've declared the assets, everything is kept confidential between the Auditor General and yourself. And therefore, it becomes very difficult for anybody to challenge the authenticity of your declaration. I think that, yes, let's declare the assets, but there should be a certain level of transparency in the declaration of the assets that people can assess what you declared, also by certain procedures. I happens to be in the Consultative Assembly when we're drawing up the Constitution of the Republic, when we put in this phrase. And I was championing the publication of the assets. And of course, the chiefs were there in their right numbers. The chiefs were so furious with me. Because they said, look, do you want people to kill us when they know what we have? So people, because of our traditional system of inheritance, where in the Akan world is maternal inheritance, so that when I am dead, it's my sister's, it's my brother first, after my brother, my sister's children. It's matrilineal. So if people know that you have a lot of things, they may kill you in advance. So people are scared to openly let people know what they have publicly. And people advance a lot of argument to prevent this open declaration of assets, which are made accessible to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. It's because of our culture. But still, we should find a way of making the asset declaration accessible, in my view. Under transparency, power purchasing agreements, right to information, and transparency in the fisheries industry has been established. Participation, citizens' complaint and feedback mechanism, gender equality, and citizens' participation in local governance is also improved. Technology and innovation, misinformation and disinformation, data sharing, and intermediation of public service delivery is also encouraged at all angles. Open Parliament, established oversight mechanism in Parliament to ensure achievement of national OGP commitments. There's a very powerful OGP committee in Parliament, and they're working to perfection. They're smelling problems everywhere and trying to get into a lot of things, which is good for us. Because Parliament belongs to all of us. And when they themselves decide to also get involved, it helps. Enhance access to information on Parliament work in an easily accessible, user-friendly, and timely manner. The main committee on accounts, public accounts committee in Parliament, sit publicly to the public. Of course, our Parliament sits in public. Committee work is normally done within the MPs. It's not external, but the committee work of the Public Accounts Committee, they sit in public. So that as we discuss the Auditor General's report, anybody can be there to even ask questions. Ladies and gentlemen, the preparation of the Faith OGP National Action Plan has been the most rigorous in Ghana's history of action plan development, from bilateral arrangements with commitment proponents to multi-stakeholder training on co-creation, actual commitment formulation, to national consultative workshops, validation and adoption by the multi-stakeholders, we have ensured that implementation of the Faith National Action Plan will not suffer the fate of previous action plans, which were either unrealistic in terms of ambition or locked up clarity in terms of ownership. We wanted the public, wanted the Ghanaian to be part of it. So most part, which led to the preparation of the plan, was through consultation and public discussions. This meeting holds profound importance, as it is not only provide us with the opportunity to showcase the exemplary sub-national experience of COST, Sekendi Takoradi, but also serves as a platform for peer learning and collaboration with the network of transparency champions in Ghana. The objectives set forth for this meeting align seamlessly with our national priorities, focusing on enhancing capacity, promoting effective governance in local infrastructure projects, and fostering agreements with stakeholders.
So that's Senior Presidential Advisor Yao Osafo-Mafo speaking at the Open Government Partnership Construction Sector Transparency Initiative Stakeholder Engagement. That would be it for Eyewitness News tonight. My name is Umaru Sanda Amado. I did this with Kosia Ochre, production by Kobna Wilson and Bevelin London. Technical support from Desmond Nyaku. New media support from Edwin Kwakufi. Up next, the City Sports team is in studio. Yao Ejeminta is here because there's a game happening tonight, which we are going to bring to you from 7 p.m., which is in the next few minutes or so. Yao, you're welcome to Point Blank.
Thank you very much, Omar.
You should have come earlier, 30 minutes. I'll interview you on sports, Ghana sports, international sports, and everything.
Oh,
lesser known sports, all those
things. I'm ever ready. I'm sure at the appropriate time, yeah, I'll be in studio for that exclusive interview.
I just saw on City Sports Online that you've published something on NBA. Is basketball a big deal in Ghana?
Yes, it is a big deal in Ghana, particularly among the youth. And the recently held African Games, there was 3x3 basketball, and it was one of the well-represented competitions in the African Games. A lot of people showed up, and the average age was, the youthful range between 20 and 30. Yeah, it's very popular among the youth, and it has a huge fan base. Unfortunately, it hasn't been able to translate into the grand scheme. Where
so it hasn't had a national acceptance? Or do we have a national basketball team?
Yes, we have.
Oh, okay.
But unfortunately, due to lack of finance and funding, so they aren't able to really participate in international competitions, qualifiers, to get the chance to be able to compete in the Olympic Games, in the AfroBasket, which is the basketball version of the AFCON.
I see. Interesting. But the Super Bowl is what? Basketball?
Super Bowl is the NFL, which is American football.
Oh, okay.
NFL is the league.
But basketball is big in America. They call it something. NBA.
NBA. That's the National Basketball Association. Uh-huh. The NBA is a league.
Okay.
And it's just like football. Basketball, you have basketball leagues in Spain. Mm-hmm. And the Spanish league is regarded as the second best basketball league in the world.
I see.
And there's basketball league in China, which is the CBA. There's the Italian Basketball League. And some of your favorite teams in the Italian league, your favorite football teams in the Italian league, they have basketball leagues.
I see.
So AC Milan, they have their basketball league.
They play
Olympia Milano.
They play the hand.
Yes.
Okay.
Olympia Milano, Napoli, all of them, they have their basketball teams.
Interesting. Very well. We're not talking basketball tonight. Yes. We're talking football. What's happening tonight?
Tonight there's Arsenal taking on Chelsea in the EPL, and it has a lot of consequences in determining the team that could potentially end up winning the EPL, because Arsenal is in strong contention to win the EPL title. They lead the league at this point in time, despite the fact, because they've played a game or two more than Manchester City and Liverpool, who are also contenders for the title. And so this game holds a lot of implications in potentially deciding which team ends up winning the EPL title this season.
So that's Yao Ejeminta in a second.